Okay, today's daf from the Sechet Yevamot brought to you Me'eretz HaKedesh is daf kuf chof aleph, and we're holding right at the Halakha Mishnah. We're talking about ways in which we can rely on a situation to be made that a man died in order to be matir his wife to marry. So let's talk about a case, says the Mishnah, where a guy falls into water. So now, according to Rabbi Meir, as it turns out, it doesn't matter whether it's Mayim Sheyesh Lehem Sof or Mayim She'ein Lehem Sof. Now, remember that we explained before that Mayim She'ein Lehem Sof means that there is a place where he could have been drawn by current out of sight before he got out from under the water. You wouldn't have noticed, and by the time he got out, you were unable to see him. But if the water was a body that was entirely surrounded by land, it was like this small pond, lake, swimming pool, whatever. So in that case, there is no way, because, I mean, if he never got out of the water, then he's dead. And if he did get out of the water, I would have seen him. However, surprisingly, Rabbi Meir says it doesn't matter. Even if it's water that Yesh Lehem Sof is completely surrounded and he never got out of the water, he is still not allowed to be made that this guy is dead. Amar Rabbi Meir, and I'll tell you why. I can tell you a Maisa. Maaseh b'echad shenafel abor agadol. Somebody fell into a bor. I mean, a bor is a cistern, you know. He got out after 3 days and he was alive. So then that means that it is possible that he actually survived. Now, we know there's many stories like this where somebody gets trapped in an air bubble. And some, I mean, there have been cases where people's boat went down. The guy was recovered a week later, momish, with carbon dioxide poisoning and so on. But he had been trapped in a room where the air hadn't escaped completely and so on. We'll see later on that there are always chashashot in various types of bodies of water, which we'll discuss, for caves. This happens all the time, that people get into a cave, can't find their way out, are able to breathe because they keep their head above the water. The only problem is, this is the way some of the Achronim learn, and I really think it makes much more sense than to attribute it to what's known as the diving response, which is a sudden metabolic change where if somebody falls into very cold water, so then the metabolism almost shuts down and he's able to survive. But I think that the longest times that are recorded for survival completely underwater is just over an hour. So I don't know how long that kind of thing, but certainly Rabbi Meir's idea of 3 days later because of a metabolic response is very difficult to believe. And therefore, many of the Achronim, actually, I shouldn't say many, but some of the Achronim learn that the Gemara is focusing on an ability to find an air bubble, and we'll see why we say that later on. And therefore, the main problem would be, believe it or not, how do you stay up for 3 days without sleeping in order to keep your head in the air bubble? That's how the Aruch Lemer learns, because that's really the only way to make sense of the sugya later. But okay, we'll get to that. So in any event, Rabbi Meir says, look, it is certainly possible that something happened, that this guy was able to survive, and that therefore, even if he never got out of the water, you can't do that. Amar Rabbi Yossi, well, I can tell you about a suma. Maaseh b'suma sheyarad litbol b'ma'ara. There was a blind man, and he went down to go to the mikvah, basically. This is obviously Mayim Sheyesh Lehem Sof, because it was in a cave. And he actually never got out. And there was a guy that had been what they call the moshko, which is a guide for someone who's blind and brings him to the place. And the guy went in after him. He also never got out. Vishou kadesha teitzei nafsham, whatever that was, which is a whole issue later on. And based on that, they told the Beis Din. The people around told the Bezin, look, these guys never got out, and they were matir at the women. So on the contrary, says Rabbi Yossi, you see that if you are in a mokum that is Yesh Lehem Sof, so then the idea is that they are matir without any chashash, like Rabbi Meir. And there was another maisa, I'll tell you. Shuv maase ba'asya. This is the maisa that we spoke about earlier, where this diver had, they had this, skin diver. And, when he pulled on the string to bring him up, they brought him up. And the only thing that came up was his foot. As I said, he apparently had a very uncomfortable encounter with a shark. And anyway, that was the only thing that they had on the string. So, and over there, the Chachamim said, Minar kuva v'lamala tinase, Minar kuva v'lamata lo tinase. So if he was injured in a way in which he's certainly going to bleed to death in a moment, so then you can be made. But if it was below the knee, so then she cannot get married. Some, of course, are true. The Pashtus is that Minar kuva v'lamata, v'lamata is a dinin hilchos treifas, but this is problematic because the question is how long would it take till he, even if you're a treifa lochai, that's lochai yud beis chodesh and so on. So again, we'll have to be semich on the sugya that we saw before, that water hurries things up. It makes it impossible to survive for very long if he's getting filled with water that's keeping the wound open. Tana Rabbanu. So let's take a look at the Braisa. The Braisa says that if a guy falls into water, Bein she'esh lehemsof, bein she'ein lehemsof, ishto asura. And here it tells us very clearly that this is the sheet of Rabbi Meir, as we saw with the description that Rabbi Meir gives of the actual anecdote where he saw that somebody survived under these circumstances. The Chachamim omrim, that it depends. If it's mayim she'esh lehemsof, so then ishto muteret. If it's mayim she'ein lehemsof, then ishto asura, which is basically Rabbi Yossi. Now, how do we define hechidami mayim she'esh lehemsof? Omer Abaye, it means where it's small enough that you could be omeid v'roa mi'arba ruchotav. So where you stand, you are able to see the banks that surround the area from all four sides, that there would be no way for you to miss the guy getting out. Now, there was a mice where who gave the tava ba'agma the samki. And so this guy drowned. Barnea, do you think that this is referring to the area which we now are trying to refill?
The chula. The yeah. Pashtus, yes.
That's what I think too, even though it's the sumki is not per se, but okay, yeah. So, all right. So anyway, this is basically a swamp. Right. And the question over there was, as we're going to see in a moment, whether we view that as being Mayim She'esh Lehemsof or Mayim She'ein Lehemsof, because Lamaisa, the Sumki, the Chula Valley is quite large, but it's also not water that flows. It's a swamp. So the question is, I mean, if we were actually relying on the idea of Mayim She'ein lehemsof, where there would be a way that the person would have been swept away by some kind of undercurrent that we're not aware of. So the guy went into the yam, got caught in a very powerful current, was dragged out to sea to the limits of our ability to see. And then he got out, but by the time that he got out, we didn't see him. So we thought that he drowned. But the question is that if you're in a swamp, I mean, there are no currents in a swamp, right? So what in the world could it mean? So there was a guy over there. This is exactly the issue that we're going to discuss. The guy, he drowned, or we assumed he had drowned, in the Agma de Sumki. And Rav Shila was matir his wife and said that she can get married. So Rav was so outraged when he heard this psak. So he says to Shmuel, look, I think we should put Rav Shila into cherem. What kind of business that he's going against all of the shitas and he's taking on himself that we are going to be matir this situation. Now, listen, gentlemen, I mean, we really have to think about, what would be the tzad to be matir this kind of situation? We have to ask ourselves, what would be the tzad to aser this kind of situation? Because as we're going to see, the Rabbanan never were mechayev a woman who actually went and got married on her own based on this kind of thing. She took for granted that her husband was dead. She went and got married. We will not insist that she gets divorced. So in other words, we're obviously willing to accept the fact that in reality, there's every reason to believe al pi rov. And if we're talking about rov in terms of chances, you know, I mean, like 99.9%, I mean, the guy's dead. So what are we doing over here, consigning her to igun for the rest of her life, perhaps, because we can't be sure about the fact that her husband died? So, I mean, how does that work? So, I mean, the pashtus, you see, the problem over here is that when you give a blanket heter that is based on an assumption that the guy is dead, you are ultimately going to run into cases. Obviously, it's based on a statistic. You're going to run into cases where you were matir an esh ezish, right? Because let's say one out of every 100 cases, the guy really did manage somehow or other to come out somewhere, right? So because of that, you cannot give a blanket heter, which is purely statistical. We've met this kind of reasoning in the issue of Shnei Shvilim and so on and so forth, but it's not that it's based on a real chashash. So the question is whether Rav Shila went ahead and because of Igun, that's what they were chayshim, that Rav Shila, because of Igun, he felt that we should be mevatel that iser and not say don't get married and let her do what she wants, essentially. So since if she would have gone ahead and got married, we would have allowed her to remain married. So that doesn't seem as outrageous as it sounds. But because that's what he did and was mevatel the way that the Chachomim decided to deal with this l'chumra, so Rav suggested to Shmuel that this is such a terrible thing, we should put him into Nidui. How does he take upon himself to do such a thing? So Shmuel said, well, don't you think we ought to ask him first? Like, what he was, I love it. This is like classic. So Shmuel says, maybe we should ask him, you know? So let's find out what he was thinking. Fine. So anyway, so Sholchulei, so they send a message to Rav Shila, tell us what the din is. Mayim she'en lehem sof, ishto asura o muteret. He sent back, of course, ishto asura, if it ain't lehem sof. They look at each other. That's interesting. So then they sent him, well, how about the Sumki swamp over here? Is that considered to be mayim she'yesh lehem sof o mayim she'en lehem sof? So he wrote back to them, it is mayim she'ela himself. So they said, what? So then why did you allow her to get married? I don't understand. You're saying, this is a simple solution. So what happened? Said Rav Shila, because I made a mistake. I'll tell you what mistake I made. Ana Savri, given the Kova Vakaimi, Kamayim she'ela himself dummy. Look, I took for granted that if there is no current, so then the entire logic of Yesh Lehem Sof or Ein Lehem Sof is irrelevant because the guy, wherever he went down, that's where he was going to be found. And therefore, for all intents and purposes, it's the equivalent of being in a place of a Mayim She Yesh Lehem Sof. But then I now realize that it was a mistake because even though there are no currents in a swamp, there can be waves. And the waves could also act as a current generator. And therefore, I should have taken that into consideration, and I didn't. And that was a mistake. But it was an honest mistake. It's not that I, you know, felt that the Chachomim were wrong in saying that we should be machmir. Okay, so then they didn't. Obviously, they realized, okay. So Kori Shmuel Alei the Rav. So Shmuel said, you see, Rav was thinking about doing a bad thing, but lo yun elet tzadik al aven. The Kadosh Baruch Hu protects a tzadik, as Shlomo Melech points out. And something like that shouldn't happen to a tzadik, that he should have put Rav Shila into Nidui. And Rav said about Shmuel, see from here, teshuah, rov yoetz. You need to talk with people who can set you straight about your reactions. Don't get so emotional about things. Talk it over. Tanya. So Omar Rabbi, I can tell you a story in which we had Mayim She'ein Lehem Sof, and indeed, he ended up surviving. Now, I do not personally understand how this is a Mayim She'ein Lehem Sof, but I guess because, you know, there's a way that you could be dragged down river, even in a small stream like the Jordan River. It's basically Mayim She'ein Lehem Sof in that direction. So there was a Maisa of two people who were fishermen, and they were setting their fishing nets. So they were putting in underwater fishing nets. One of them got into this Mechilah Shel Dagim. And Mechilah Shel Dagim is an underground, it's basically an underground cave, but it's a small area which is hollowed out by aquatic creatures for laying eggs or for whatever purpose. And what happened was that there was an air bubble in there. There was enough nuts because these are made right at the water line. And they, one of them got in there into a Mechilah Shel Dagim. And meanwhile, the sun set while he was busy working in there and he could not find the opening. So the other guy stayed there. You know, it's hours. The man hasn't gotten out. He realizes he must be dead. Didn't imagine that he could have survived in some kind of air pocket. So he comes and he tells the people, look, you know, the guy died. So the next day, when the sun rose, he made out where the opening was. And he came back home. So he and he comes back home to listen to all these hespedim about him. It was a lot of fun. I mean, he didn't walk in right away, you know. So he comes back home to this big hesped, betoch beto. Oh, my Rebbe, you see? Kama gedolim divrei chachamim. Shamru mayim sheyesh lem sof ishto muteret. She'ein lem sof ishto asura. Oh, wait a minute, Rebbe. So that it has nothing to do with yesh lem sof or ein lem sof. It just has to do with the fact that he happened to find an air pocket. So that could have taken place anywhere, no? So, So why don't we say, even if he's surrounded completely, the guy never comes out. Yeah, he never came out because he found an air pocket. So what's so crazy about that? How is it dependent in Mayim Sheyesh Lehem Sof or Ein Lehem Sof? No, I'll tell you. Because if it's Mayim Sheyesh Lehem Sof, then you usually do not have in a small body of water, or in a swimming pool for sure, you do not have a situation where you have aquatic creatures that are going to hollow out this kind of thing. And therefore, it is not benimtza that we should be tola it on a mechila shel dagim. And therefore, that's part of what was taken into consideration about mayim sheyesh lehem sof or ein lehem sof. Omer Ravashi, now listen, you got to know that when we say that mayim she'ein lehem sof ishto asura, because I don't know, maybe he was dragged out to some place and got out on an island and then picked up by a passing boat, whatever, and now he's in Crete. I mean, so how would we know that he was found? But I mean, if this guy is Elvis Presley, I mean, we would know, right? So if he's a Talmud Chacham, for sure we would know. So therefore, listen, they're still looking for Elvis Presley 60 years later. People see him all the time. So for sure, if he was a Talmud Chacham, wherever he got out, the word would have got out. And therefore, Tani Milibinish Be'alma, that's just regular people. But if he's a superstar and he's a Tzurba Mirabonan, so then if he got out of the water, you don't think that the whole world would be talking about him? Kala Itle. People would have found out. They would have said, my gosh, the Rebbe is here, washed ashore, next to his gabbai, both of them hiding behind trademarks or pictures, beyond belief. This is the joy that they're ready to give to everyone else. But all right. So even though Rebbe's try to protect themselves, but the word gets out. That's what I say. We make an afkamina la locha. But, says the Gemara, it's not true. Belogi. Loshna inish the alma. Loshna tzumira bonan. The din is, and here's where we learn this halacha babidi avad. If she did go ahead and get married, without asking. I say without asking, but not everybody agrees without asking. In other words, if she Bedafka went against the Psak of Besdin, would we also not tell her that she has to get divorced? That, in fact, is a machlokas. But in the event that she did go ahead and get, so if she got married without asking, for sure, nobody argues. It's possible even if she asked and she ignored the Psak. But it's only Bidi Avad that we would allow her to retain her second marriage. But Lechatchilalo, we're not going to tell her that she can get married. And we have other Maisim where people did survive, like Tanya, Omer Rebbe Gamliel. You know, one time I was in, Travis traveling by ship, and there was another ship that was within range, which I happened to know that some of the passengers on that other ship. And we got caught in a storm, and I saw the other ship break up in high seas and went down. And I was so upset because Hayiti Mitzta'er al Talmid Chacham Shebo. There was this tremendous Talmud Chacham on that trip, on that ship. And that was Talmud Chacham that became Rabbi Akiva. And when I got to wherever I was heading, Rabbi Akiva comes and he sits down to learn. So what? I thought you were dead. So how did you get out of that? So I said, Bini, Amartilo, Bini, Mihelcha, how the heck did you get out of there in the high seas? Marli, Dafsho Svina Nizdamainlin. Look, there was one piece of wood from the broken up boat that I was able to grab a hold of. And then as every wave crashed over my head, I just kept my head down till it passed and went back up again. I was able to survive. V'kol gal v'gal shabalai, I na'aneti lo roshi, I bowed my head, hello wave. Okay. Emikan amru chachamim. That's the way people have to look at life, you know. You've got these mamzerim and they're going to come crashing over you. Put your head down. Im yavo risha'im al adam, yana'no lo rosho. Don't fight them. Bow your head to them. And amarti botasha asu. Then Rabbi Gamliel says, you know, when I saw that, that here I was already mourning the death of this wonderful boy that was going to, I'm sure was going to become a great man. And sure enough, he survived. I said, kama gedolim divrei chachamim. Shamru mayim sheyesh lehem sof. There you could say that he died, but if it's mayim she'ein lehem sof, you have no idea. So if somebody would hold on to some piece of rubble, and he could get out, and you wouldn't see him get out. Exactly what happened over here. And there's another mice with Rabbi Akiva, who had the same mice happen to him. So Tanya Amar Rabbi Akiva, I could tell you the same thing happened to me, that pa'am achata yitim ahalech besvina. So I was on a ship, and I see this other ship, that I knew the passengers, and it broke up on high seas. V'yitim itster al tamid chacham sheba. Oy vey, I'm thinking, Rabbi Meir, that wonderful kid, the guy's a genius. Who knows what he's going to turn out to be? And there I am mourning him. Anyway, I finally came out in Barnea's neighborhood in Kapotkia. And there he was, Rabbi Meir. There he was sitting in the audience. So I say to him, oh my gosh, my son, you know, what happened? How'd you get out of there? Baba Yashava Dunlafanai Bini Mihelcha. Amar Lee, listen, I basically surfed my way home. One wave swept me to the next wave, and that swept me to the next wave. And I find myself spit out onto dry land. Oh, Marti Botasha, ah, says Rabbi Akiva, I said to myself, ah, Kameg Dolim Divrei Chachamim, everybody says it's ridiculous. And here I see a case with my own eyes that if you have Mayim Sheyesh Lehem Sof, only then Ishto Muteret. Kapotkia. Barnea is selling some of his Kapotkia miskerot. Anybody wants to put in an offer is welcome.
Ready. Why can't we say this is another approach in handling Rishayim? Instead of bowing your head, you can ride them like a wave.
Like the Gemara says, you'd have to be a tzaddik gomor then. Are you ready to take the chance?
Well, maybe that's a difference between Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Meir.
Yeah. Different approaches. Very different approaches. I should have known that Alon would take advantage of this one, you know. Sure enough. Tana Rabbanan, how about if you fall into a lion den. Now, that's an interesting way to go, huh? So you fall into a lion den. So what happens there? Ain't made in love. You can't say that the guy died. How do you know that he died? Lions don't necessarily attack anything that comes into the cage, you know? So, I don't know. Maybe you don't look very tasty. Or maybe they're not hungry. I mean, like, why would they stom attack you, all those nice kitty cats? But if you fall into a chafura melayan nechashim v'akrabim, you fall into, this is, of course, baramis to a chafura like that that we know about, and you fell into it, so then you can be made. Me'idim alav. Okay, let him come in. Open up the door, boys. Come on. Open up the mirpeset. Then you can be me'id. Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira Omer, why? How do you know? Maybe if you let the guy falls in and you're a maid, maybe you're letting a woman marry where her husband was a snake charmer. You wouldn't want to let a snake charmer be assumed dead just because he's surrounded by snakes. I mean, this is his profession. So maybe he's a chabar. So afle chafura meleyan chashim va'akrabim emi din alav chayshinan shema chabarhu. So how can you be made? Says the Tanakhama, no. Because if you fell into it, you obviously have attacked, as far as they're concerned. They think that you attacked them when you fell into them. And agav itzitza, they're going to, before you have a chance to calm anybody down, or any snake down, they are going to attack you. So even if you're a chabar, it's not going to help. You remember in that beautiful My Octopus Rebbe story, where the guy dropped his camera by accident. It was a disaster, right? The octopus was convinced it was under attack. This is the same idea. Tana Rabbanan, how about if you fall into a kivshan ha'esh? So then me'idim alav. How about if you fall into a pot of boiling wine or boiling oil? My gosh, what a way to go. Me'idim alav. They actually used that as a mode of execution. Would you believe it? This was like, you know, the favorite way of killing people. Some places in the Middle Ages. So they would boil them up. I think King Henry had made it zera that anybody who was caught with treachery against the Melech has to be boiled alive. So there's a lot of interesting descriptions of these kinds of ends. Oh, then there's also the famous Sikh story about this tzaddik and kodesh who was boiled alive, but they boiled him alive starting in a pot of cold water. That's straight out of the movies, right? So they're boiling him alive in the cold water. So the maaser was that he managed to do the entire Tanakh, what they call the Tanakh, before he died, sitting there in that water. Great story. Anyway, but lemaisa, you can be made. Me'idim alav. Mishur Mabaka says, no, wait a minute. If it's oil, yes, because if it's oil, the splash splashes the oil, and the oil creates even a bigger fire, and therefore you're kaput. But if it's something that's not flammable, so then the splash may actually enable you to get out by having some momentary cooling effect and so on. So then shoyayin ain't me eating all of it. Neshu mechabeh. Omrulo, yeah, it may be mechabeh for a moment, but like afterwards it comes out even stronger. And sofo mavir. So therefore you can't do that. Omr Rebbe Meir. Okay, getting back to the story in the Mishnah. Somebody falls into a cistern, by definition, that is Mayim Sheyesh Lahem himself, right? Because if the guy would have gotten out, I would have seen him. And 3 days later, he was alive. Tanya Amrula, the Rebbe Meir, look, don't bring anecdotal evidence from something that is so crazy that it's basically a miracle. So miracles don't happen every day. So forget about it. What do you mean? Why is it a miracle? I don't understand. What makes you say it's a miracle? What, the fact that the guy clearly didn't have anything to eat or drink for 3 days? That's not a miracle. I mean, if Esther Amalka said that the whole world is supposed to be fasting for 3 days and three nights on her. She did not think that she's killing anybody, right? So obviously that's not a miracle. It says, Shomu alai al tuchlu v'al tishtu laila v'yom. Shoshi yomim. Ela delonai. The miracle is that he would have been unable to sleep. Now here is the raya, one of the main rayas, besides the obvious unlikelihood that it could have meant anything else, that the issue over here was that the person remained alive by keeping his head above water. In order to keep his head above water in an air bubble, he would not have been able to sleep because then he would have sunk and he would have died, right? So that is a miracle, because we did learn that Omer Rabbi Yochanan, if a guy makes a shvua that he's not going to sleep for the next 3 days and nights, that is considered to be a shvua shav. And therefore, it wasn't chal, because it's like saying, I make a shvua that I am going to go to Jupiter. So that's a shvua shav. Do we wait and see whether he gets to Jupiter? No. We just give him malchus on the spot for making a shvua shav. Same thing over here. But do we wait to see that he's going to go to sleep? No. We actually give him a malchus because of a shvua shav, not a shvua sheker. It's ridiculous. So malkino tovi yishan la'alter. So if you're telling me that a guy managed to survive under those circumstances for 3 days, then that meant he could not possibly have slept during that time, or he would have suffocated. So that's a miracle. It's a Torah Rebbe Meir. You can't bring a raya from anecdotal miracles, Rebbe Meir. Why does he say that it's possible? Because Rebbe Meir says, look, if you have underground patches of areas where there could be a air bubble, so then the point is that you've got something to lean on. That's what's referring to over there. There were like these keep-in, you know, there was like one area that was had a little rounded top that trapped a bubble, and there was another one above it, and so on. And he was able to keep finding these air bubbles. Now, if they were keep-in, so then he would have been able, wasn't as if he was at the bottom of the thing and he needed to stand up. There were these keep-ins. So wherever he was, he could have leaned on one of those keep-in and slept for a moment. And therefore, it's not a miracle. Rabbanan, we know that place. Those keep-in were slippery. That whole area was like basically marble. And there would be no way that he could have leaned on them without slipping down to the bottom. So it was a nace. So Rabbi Meir says, no, because I don't care how smooth it is. The point is, when we say that it would be miraculous, it would be that he wouldn't have been able to sleep for 10 seconds. Okay, I mean, that's not the case. The case is that he could certainly have been able to sit on one of those things, lean on it. There would be enough friction to lean on it for a minute. Okay, so he did sleep. So it's not a miracle. So he was able to frictionally hold on to it and rest a little bit. Tana Rabban. This is the famous, beautiful story of Rabbi Chanina ben Doza, one of the grand stories of Rabbi Chanina ben Doza. Remember that he was a tremendous tzaddik. He was very concerned for the fact that the Oilei Regalim did not have suitable cisterns along the way from Bavel when they started coming to the Beis HaMikdash. And he used to go around and dig these cisterns that would get filled during the winter time. And that way, anybody coming up from Bavel would be able to find water. Tremendous chus. Tremendous chus. Anyway, the daughter of Nechunya Chofer Shichim fell into one of the giant chafirot that her father had dug. So they came and they told Rabbi Chanina ben Doza this incredible tragedy. So Rabbi Chanina ben Doza, of course, is the one who would always be mispalel to save people under the craziest circumstances. And he said, don't worry about it. Everything's fine. She's under there for an hour, you know. We stop worrying so much. It's only an hour. They came and they told him, oh, well, now it's 2 hours. Help. No problem, he says. I don't know what you guys are so concerned about. everything is absolutely all right. And then by the third hour, Shlishit, so he said to them, okay, there's nothing to worry about because she's already out. Anyway, sure enough, it turns out that that's exactly what happened. She had gotten out. So Amarla, so Rabbi Chanina asks her, so tell us this story, you know, how exactly did you get out? Mihelach, who took you out of there? So she says, I only saw this ayal came my mind, my way, Zachar Sherechelim, so the male sheep, and I didn't know what it was, but it was, according to Rashi, a siman of the Elo Shel Yitzchak, and it was this old man that was walking it, and that must have been like Avram Avinu, says Rashi. So she was Zocha because of the chasodim of her father from Midas Hadin. Or others say it's because it was a Temura. Basically, the Elo Shel Yitzchak was a Temura for Yitzchak. So over a year, her father, because of his chasodim, was Zocha to a Temura. Whatever that was, that she got out. Rulo, so they said to Rav Chanina ben Dosa, it's a crazy story. How in the world did you know? Naviata? And as I always point out, would you ask the Gera Rebbe? How do you know? Huh? Would you? Would you ask the Chabad Rebbe? How did you know? They would cut off your head. What do you mean, how do I know? You ask the Rebbe, how do I know? But Rebbe Chanina ben Dosa said, what do you think? There's some kind of magic in this? Of course, how do I know? I have absolutely no idea. You think I'm a Navi? I'm just a regular guy. But I can tell you one thing, that I believe 100% in HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Yashur Satsur Tamim Palo. HaShofet Kol Haaretz Lo Yaaseh Mishpat. I mean, it's absurd. A man dedicates his life to digging these pits in order that people should be zeicha to come to the Beis HaMikdash, and his daughter is going to drown in one of these pits? It's ridiculous. So I said to everybody, what are you worried about? Somehow or other, she's going to get out. That's all. So davar she'at tzadik mitasek bo, yikashel bo zaro. Nonetheless, incredibly, Omer Rabbi Abba, what do you think this is? Some type of romantic notion that, I mean, HaKadosh Baruch Hu wouldn't hurt a tzadik, but I can tell you one thing, that this guy who dedicated his entire life to making sure that the people that were coming up to the Beis HaMikdash would have what to drink, his son died of thirst. And that is not the same as here. Over here, as Tosis points out, here, if she would have died in that boar, it would have meant that her father's activity had killed her. The boar killed her. So the father dug the boar, and that is the kli that HaKadosh Baruch Hu uses for Midas Hadin. That's impossible. But the fact that it should be a gilui, that just because you were Isaac in something, so that, oh, that's perfection. You never took maybe some pride in the fact that your name is the famous Nukun Yechai Fakir, Sheikh Numaris. There was nothing in it that had any level of ulterior darkness to take a beautiful action and make it just sullied enough that it couldn't be to complete covet of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's not possible. So, that is the inyan of Svivav Nisaramot. As we saw before, that inyan, that the closer a person gets to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the more Medayek Minas Adin is on him. And that means, Malamish HaKadosh Baruch Hu Medakdekim Svivav Kechuta Sa'ara, that the closer you are, the more specific is the Midas HaDin, and the more exacting is the Midas HaDin, and therefore, Adarabba, it's exactly what you would expect under these circumstances. If there was something that was chaser, obviously it couldn't be that he himself should do that which killed, but that it should be something that is reflective of any concern in the activities of his life. That's exactly what you would think. Rabbi Chanina Amar, you can learn that without Tzvivav Nisara Ma'od. El Naratz, another beautiful pasuk in Tehillim. El Naratz Besod Kedoshim Rabbah, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is, people are terrified in the place where the greatest tzaddikim, the greatest kedoshim are gathered together. That's where you find the greatest terror. V'Nora HaKol Sevivotav, this tremendous awe and Yiras HaMokim, the closer you are to surrounding him. We don't have to go to Sviva Nisara. It's partially here, it says exactly the way people feel. Which brings us to this amazing moment of our very own Sir Richard.
Zuk the Helika Mitzvah.
Afilu Shamam in Anashim Omrot Metish Ploni. Look, if we're talking about hearsay evidence, you should say, I mean, look, we may be Batir Neid Echa, but it can't be hearsay Neid Echa, can it? It can. If the only way that he knows that this guy died, and he admits, I don't have the slightest idea. All I know is I was in the Makolet, and all these women were chattering and they were talking about the fact that this guy had died. I mean, I have the slightest idea what's going on. I just know that everybody took for granted that he died. Dio, that is sufficient to be made that he's dead. Because again, it's not the facts of his death that are important over here. It is the reality in terms of how people view what happened. And that's all that we need. Reb Yehuda Omer. You know what? Even if you hear little kids, and obviously normally what we're going to listen to a little kid, your little kid talking about, oh yeah, we're going out to the big hesped and the funeral of Mr. So-and-so, you know, the good old Mr. Taylor, the Taylor, and, you know, that's enough. And it wouldn't even matter. It doesn't matter whether the person saying over this maysa uses it and intends to use it to be matir his wife to get married, the person's wife to get married, or not. He just maybe he wants people to know, you know, so that they should sit shiva, whatever it is. So it doesn't matter why he's saying it. Review it and ben bav omer. Now wait a minute. It's the way to look at it is the other way around. If he is a Jew, so then if he's a Yisrael, then even if he has a specific intent to be matir, you can accept it. But if he's a goy, then you cannot, because the only reason that you're believing him is because he would not have a particular end in mind, and he's just sort of talking, in which case we're not looking at it as edus. We're looking at it the way we looked at the Makolet discussion among the women. I'm not saying aid me be aid over there. I'm describing a reality which is a consensual reality. So what's the difference? A guy, it's kids, whatever. It's a consensual reality. Now, there's a machlokas lemaisa, whether those words of Ben Shemit Kaven are also going back on Tinokot, or whether Tinokot is gufa a machlokas over here. And Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava was not saying that even Tinokot would be acceptable. We'll talk about it in the Gemara. So the question is like this. How does even a consensual reality serve if it's being spoken about by children in what's going to be? What do you mean we're going? So we're going, and they never went. And word got out that the guy never died. But I understand you can't talk about plans. Plans? No, of course it doesn't mean that. It must mean Omer B'Yudam Shmuel. It means, oh, we just came back from the big hesped and the levaya of the tailor, Mr. Taylor, and that you can rely on. How do you rely on this? Children play, for God's sake, and to them, play is reality. I mean, what happened, possibly, is that these kids found a wonderful praying mantis. And they made a big levaya for the praying mantis here. Remember Mr. Taylor, the chazan? You know, doesn't this remind you of Mr. Taylor? So let's make a hesped and a kfura for Mr. Taylor. So they carry the praying mantis on a piece of paper and they dig a hole and they do the whole thing. And then they came back home. Dad, we just had a wonderful time at the levaya of Mr. Taylor. Mr. Taylor, I just saw him in shul from Mincha. Now we buried him. We were must. I don't know. So why not? You can't take people who see play as an experience of reality and make that a consensual reality. This is nuts. So maybe it was just the kamtza b'alma shachivle, which is where I always bring a raya, right? This is Kamsa Bar Kamsa. That's the point of Kamsa Bar Kamsa. This guy's name isn't Mr. Ant. But anyway, so we're talking about a case over here where they said, oh, listen, you know, the Brisker Rav gave a hesped, and Reb Shlomo Zalman gave a hesped, and I mean, they've got a whole list of the people that give hespedim, Kain Vekain Rabbonin Aviyasam, and they had the famous Magid, he was giving a hesped, and the Rebbe was there, and he gave a hesped. So, okay, I mean, how much could they be playing, you know, if they're giving the, all of the details? So then already it seems to be part of some kind of reality. Fine. Now, if the guy wanted to achieve a heter for the guy's wife, then we said we will not believe it. This is only where, when we're talking about he was mitkaven. What does mitkaven mean? Mitkaven means bedavka, to be matir, his wife. But even if he did want people to know, and he wanted it official, and he, and maybe his intention was for some other element, you know, it could be, who knows? Maybe it had to do with financial documents or whatever. But if he was just nitkaven lahaid, even though he did want to be made, we would accept it even vis-a-vis the wife, because that wasn't his intent. It isn't clear what the reason is. Some say maybe the reason is that he is serving as her shliach to claim to the courts. It could be she gave him some money on the side, you know, so the court's going to believe him. So he is not going to be believed if there's an intent. What do you mean if there's an intent? How do we know if there's an intent? Well, if he walks into Beis Din and he says, you know, Mr. Taylor died and you should be matir, his wife, to marry, I mean, that is obviously intent. So we're not going to believe him. Zonit kavin latir. If he's just saying Mr. Taylor died, so zeu nit kavin leidut. Itmar nami omer shlokish lo shano elo shalot nit kavin lahatir. It's only if he didn't intend to be matir the woman. It's kavin lahaid heiduto eidus. But Rabbi Yochanan says, no, there was a maisa at the time of Oshaya Baribi, and he mamish got into a fight with 85 of the greatest Talmidei Chachamim, and he was fighting his head off over there to prove that they were all wrong, and that he said, Lo shano elo shenitkaven lahatir aval nitkaven lahaid. So we say over here that it's puzzle. It's only puzzle where he wanted specifically to be matir. But if he wanted only to be meid, then we will accept his edut. And he was defeated, no matter how many rayas he brought. And that means there was a rove of 85 people against Rabbi Shaya Baribi, who said that you do not accept edus of any kind. Forget about whether it's to be matir. What do you mean? What are you bringing me a story, Rabbi Yochanan, when the Mishnah says beferish? So where exactly do we understand that it would be? I mean, the Mishnah is clearly saying that there is a time where we would. It's just if he was mitkaven. Now, how do you understand the meaning of mitkaven? So what is the eno mitkaven according to you? Eino mitkaven means when he was part of the conversation at the cocktail hour or in the makolet along with the women, not that he walked into Beis Din at all. So it's only a mesiach lefitumo. I mean, I'll tell you a story. There was this guy, a guy, and he was walking around town and he said, listen, anybody who knows anyone from the Beit Chivay family, I have terrible news. Chivay dropped dead. And based on that, they were matir. He didn't come into Beis Din Bechlal. He was just saying the story that had happened to him, that we were Mekabel, and Reb Yosef was matir, his wife. And there was another guy, a goy, who was saying, oh, what a tragedy. That amazing horseman in Pumpadiso was the best guy you could trust to get a letter delivered, and he dropped it. And based on that, Reb Yosef, maybe Rava, was matir, his wife. And another maisa was that he was saying, Manika Bechasa, Tava Chasa, anybody here from knows anybody from the Chasa family, they should know that the guy's dead. And Reb Nachman said, he drowned. So Reb Nachman, when he heard it, said, "Oy vavoy, Chasa has been eaten by the fish." What in the world? This is an amazing story. His Chasa's wife, who hears this, says, "Reb Nachman said Chasa was eaten by the fish?" Understand, if Reb Nachman would have had a chashash that Chasa was still alive, you don't think that he would have said, "Oy, the Ribbono Shel Olam should save Chasa, oy, vavoy, Hashem Yishmor." And instead, he's going around mourning, "My dear Chasa, fish food." So she went ahead and got married because she said, well, obviously, Reb Nachman basically was paskening halacha l'maisa. Don't bother davening for Chasa. He's plain old fish food. So she went and married. And v'lo amru lo v'lo midi. They didn't tell her to leave her husband. Now, obviously, they didn't tell her to leave her husband because b'di avad, we don't do that, right? But what was Reb Nachman doing? So in other words, the point is, I suspect that just like we saw before, that the getter of the Takanas Chachomim is that Beis Din will not be matir on this basis, because in any statistical story, there will always be a dramatic situation where a guy did survive, and then what happens to the Beis Din? And then what happens to the entire concept of trusting the Pesach? We can't do that. But suppose Reb Nachman wants this woman to get married, right? So he knows that in his exclamation, "Oh my God, poor Chasa, fish food." Well, of course that's true, because 99% of the time Chasa would be fish food, and you have every right in the world to bemoan the laws of Chasa, and certainly it's ridiculous, it's a tefillah shav to go praying for Chasa when he's undoubtedly fish food, and despite that, you're not going to be able to matir his wife. So when his wife hears this, she goes and gets married, which turns it into a bidyavad, in which, what can you do? Can't take her away from her new husband, in which case everything works out fine. Amar Rav Ashi, but one thing you see from here, Shmamina, that Hodi Amar Rabban Amayim She'en Lam Sof Ishto Asura, only means the Chatkila Ishto Asura. But if she went ahead and got married, we will not take her out, which was a conclusion that we had earlier. But others say that Reb Nachman was being semich on the psak that we had before, and he actually beferish was matir Chasa's wife to get married. Amar, he said, "Listen, Chasa is not just anybody. Chasa is a great man. Anybody who knows Alexander McCall Smith, Professor Lettuce, it's exactly the story. So here is Professor." If Professor Lettuce would have been nice, I see Moshe Chandel is a fan. Okay. So here, Chas is a great man, as Professor Lettuce will be happy to tell you about himself. And if he was saved, so then we would have found out about it. Im ita the solik, kala itle, we would have definitely heard. But that's not true, because we said before, loshna gavaraba, loshna lav gavaraba, it's always a bidyavad and not a lechatchila. Now listen, guys, if my suspicion is correct, so then what the Gemara is doing now is explaining why Reb Nachman went against the psak. Not that he was beferish matir, but that he knew that she would get married. So this became now the two different lashinas. He wouldn't have said Chasa's fish food if it hadn't been also for taking into consideration this thing which we don't pass. But Lamais is an additional consideration for me not to worry about his wife going out and making her own determination in the circumstances. If that's true, it has major implications for how you give a psak halacha in these questions of Igun. Okay, so you can sometimes make things happen by not responding. So there was another maysa where a guy says to this Jew, "All right, Jew boy, you're going to cut me down some animal feed, some aspasta, and feed my animals right now on Shabbos. And if you don't, I'm going to cut your throat the same way I killed the other Jew. I told him, you boil me up my pot on Shabbos, and if not, Well, I didn't even tell him, but he didn't boil up the pot and I slit his throat. So this guy whose name he mentioned, she hears him and she comes to Abaye and she says, okay, can I get married based on that? So Abaye didn't want the paskin. We'll see why not. Shahita shtlata rigli. And he was quiet for 3 regalim. The regalim, the Talmid Chachomim get together, and there's always the kala, and there's time for people to discuss things. Rashi brings a very interesting pshat in which he says the Ge'enim say in a tshuva that all over Shas, where it says there's a lot of these stories where people waited tlasa rigle, that rigle are a reference to yard sites, and that when one of the Talmid Chachomim died on the yard site, they would get together for discussions and for learning, and that's what it's a reference to, not to the regolim of the holidays. So, okay, so he discussed it for three of these regolim, and they could not come to a conclusion. So Rav Ada Bar Ava said to him, you know what? Go speak it over with Rav Yosef. He didn't get here. He's like very sharp. The Chorev Sakine. So she did. And she goes to Rav Yosef, and he says, you're never going to get an answer from Abaye. So Parshat Mi'om Masnisa, and he answered her from the following brisa. Oveid kochavim shayamocher perot b'shuk, v'yomer perot halolo shel orla hein, shel azeka hein, shel netaravai hein, lo omar klum. Now, Barnea disappeared just when we need him the most? No. He's there. He just forgot about reminding me to drink. He may have fallen asleep, Chas v'chalil. But we don't want him to sleep just when we're talking about Azeka. Aha. So anyway, this guy comes along and he's selling these fruit. And he says, these fruit are absolutely the best. They are so ripe, young, and delicious that I just planted this tree this year, and these are the fruits. Now, basically, that means that they're orla. He thinks he's going around telling people how delicious this fruit are. Meanwhile, none of the Jews can buy the fruit. Or, he says, these come from Azeka. Now, what an upshotim in Azeka. This brings us right back to Shvius, which is good, because we're about to finish Yevamos. Finally get back to our Shvius a little bit. Which Azeka, remember, if you recall the words on the ring of power, the azak, azak is a lotion of being surrounded as with a ring. So an azeka would mean that you have a area which is completely enclosed. And Rashi says, and I was makabel, that means that it was during Shemitah and there was a fence around it and therefore it was usher. But I don't appreciate that shot because why would it be usher just because of the shomer? But we had this machlokas. Rashi holds that Shomer is not Aser. But the Rabbeinu Tam learns, remember, we went to the whole Torah Kohanim, and the Torah Kohanim says that you're only allowed Minam Mufkar, you're allowed to be Botzer, and you're allowed to be Osef. But Iyata Osef, Minam Ishumar. So that was a tremendous machlokas we showed him. It's actually a three-way machlokas, whether it means it's Aser Bichlal, the way the Rabbeinu Tam learns, which Tosus brings over here in our sugya, that no, would have been Osir, whereas Rashi learns, no, it means you can't be Botzer Kiderech HaBotzerim. You have to be Mishaneh. Remember this big machlokas. But you are allowed to eat it. Therefore, Rashi understands that it doesn't mean that. It means the town of Azeka from Eretz Yisrael. And this guy was selling these peiros in Chutzlarts, but that would mean that all the Jews, no, does it have a Badat section for Meiser? I don't know how to Meiser over here in San Jose. Go for it, Rav Barnea. Where is Azeka? We had some very special experiences in Azeka, I believe.
It overlooks Emek Ha'ilah, and it's the physical geographic boundary between Eretz HaPlishtim facing west and Eretz Yehuda coming in. And therefore, when the Plishtim cross Azeka and then camp between Socha and Azeka, that's basically an invasion. Physically, it's an outstandingly high mountain. There's an Assyrian description that it's perched like an eagle. So this sense of being this powerful circled area is true topographically. And then depending on when you date the walls, it was also fortified. In the end of Bayis Rishon, Yirmiyahu is begging Tzidkiyahu, opened up the gates of Yerushalayim, 34:7. And as he's speaking to him, Nebuchadnezzar is attacking the last Arim B'tzarot B'Yehuda, Lachish and Azekah. So it's the symbol of a fortified city at the end of its time.
Now, David wants to add.
I just wanted to add, if I'm not mistaken, that Azekah is just a stone's throw away from Emek Ha'ilah.
But did anybody get the pun that David was saying?
No. That's where David fought Goliath, the stones. Yeah.
The five stones.
Barnett, I just assumed they all got.
Winery. We've been to Kaputkia. Okay, right, how much better can it get than that?
Okay, so anyway, or he said, we'll just finish this up, or he said, they're netter avoy, meaning, oh, I've only had this thing for 3 years. This is like first time it's produced fruit, which again is going to make it usher to Yisrael. Lo amaklum. Don't believe a word he said. Every last thing he said was just so that people would want to buy his fresh fruit. Same thing is true of a year. Just because the guy said, I killed the Jew, didn't boil up my pot on Shabbos, that doesn't mean you believe a thing he said. He wants to scare the other Jew, that's all. And it has nothing for it. Barnea, didn't we have some personal experience in Azekah?
Rebbe came to the British fortress, Erbet Kayafa, and explained that why it might be Sha'arayim. And at the second gate, when I showed Rebbe the pasuk, Rebbe almost fainted.
Yeah. Okay. Abayudin ish tzayadan amar, ma'aseh b'Yisrael b'aviv kachavim sha'olchu baderach. The guy goes, sets off with the Jew. He comes to the town where they were coming without the Jew. And he comes in and he says, such a shame. I had this great guy was with me and he died along the way. He had a heart attack and I had to bury him. He was really a good fellow. And based on that, they allowed his wife to get married because again, it was not being said in terms of Eidus. And there was another Maaser where there's a whole group of people that were going on their way to Barnea's neighborhood in Antioch. And there was a guy that was with them, and said the same thing. I was with this whole group of people. They were all killed on the way, and I buried them. And based on that, they were Messiah, even the whole group's wives. And there was another mice with 60 people that were going through a war zone. So this was already, they were around the Kharkom. Kharkom is the enemy attack where they besieged a city. And that was called the Kharkom of Beitar. And an Ovid Kachovim came along and said, that on the way, Chaval al Shishim b'nei Adam, it is crazy, with 60 Jews with me, and they're all dead, and I buried them, which there you would think it could be because it was a milchama, maybe you jumped to conclusions, whatever. And nonetheless, you see you et nishotehem. Anyway, what I wanted to tell you over was we were learning about Azekah, and Reb Barnea sent us some pictures, beautiful pictures about Azekah. And remember that the pshat that Rashi had brought, that Rashi didn't like, that we were discussing the fact that Tosus actually supports the pshat that Rashi rejects. Rashi said he was mekabel, that the idea of Azekah is that it was surrounded, it was a ring, and that therefore there would have been a problem of Shamur, and because of this, it would have been osur to eat. But Rashi says, I don't agree with that, because it doesn't say anything about Shamur being Asur. It only says that Shamur, this is the way, of course, that Rashi understands this big machlokas Rishonim about how to understand the Torah's Kohanim, that when it says that the Mufkar, you're allowed to be Botzer, but not the Shamur, that means that Mufkar, you're allowed to be Botzer any way you want, whereas Shamur, you can't be Botzer any way you want. You can only be Botzer okay, we had all of that machlokas in Shvius. But anyway, I just wanted to, there's a very curious sidelight to this. And that's a beautiful story about, it's actually in the Tshuvas also, with Reb Meisha, in which in Shnat Tovshin Yud Beit, which was a Shnas HaShmita, so he speaks about the problems of Esrogim, and this was Erev Sukkot Tovshin Yod Gimel that he writes this. And in the normal derech of his tremendous kovet for other people's opinion and so on, so he brings He says, "Bidvar hetrogim sheviu miEretz Yisrael b'shana zo sof shna tovshin yud beit sheishnat shmita al pi horad beit din harashit." He speaks with COVID. Sh'asu kitakanatam ayedei mechira l'nochri sh'arbein sovrim etterze. Im yesh l'machmirim eze chashash milatzet yidei chovata mitzvah ulevorech aleihem. So he's coming basically to deal with the question of the heter mechira on etrogim from Eretz Yisrael, and would it be okay in Chutz La'aretz for people to buy these etrogim and to say a bracha on these etrogim, or is there really a problem because many people don't hold of the heter mechira, and so on. So he brings that, he doesn't, he'll never mention any names, but he brings a Gaon Echad that put out this tshuva, and he asked to buy them, and he asked to be yotzi with them. And furthermore, he says, anybody who sells or buys such a srogim, it's as if he's kofer b'maaseh bereshit, and if he does it b'far hesya, it's as a din of mechalal Shabbos b'far hesya, shehu kemumar v'choshud akol ha'tayra kula. Unbelievable. Of course, quoting the inyanim of the Ramban, right? That's basically what the Ramban says, that somebody doesn't believe in Shemitah, he's going to go for my separation. Okay, fine. So by definition, if you accept the heter mechira of the Rabbanut HaRashit, so then you are a kofer by my separation. Unbelievable. So, okay. So Reb Moshe says, so first of all, this guy is a to'eh bidvar mishnah. This is lashon. It's like, you know, a complete and total mistake lahalacha. It has absolutely nothing to do with the heter mechira. Bechalal. So politics get into it. And he goes through all of these issues that we've been talking about in terms of Rashi. So he says, first of all, this is the only one who holds, really, that Shamur is Asur Bachila, remembers Rabbeinu Tam, as we learned. And so he brings from this Gemara, we learned the whole issue of the Rabbeinu Tam and the Pirish in the Sefer HaYosher that Taisus brings on the Teres Kayanim. And yes, we know that this is the Shita of the Rabbeinu Tam. But he brings, Rav Moshe, that Rashi, right over here on our daf, and the Rambam, and the Rash, and the Rashba, and the Ramban, and he says it's Mefurish Kain, even though they bring it, the B'Shem HaRamban is a psak, but Mefurish Kain B'Ramban B'Pirush HaAlat Torah, and the Ravid, and the Taisvis that argues with the Rabbeinu Tam in Sukkah. Anyway, he goes on and on. And V'Nimtza She'esh Lanu Rov Rishonim Neged Rabbeinu Tam, and also Neged, this is the Rabotav Shorashi that told him this pshat that he didn't like. And the Balamor is the other Shita that answers. And therefore, I say, says Rav Moshe, Yesh li smoke alayo af b'yom tov rishon, shetzorech lachem midiraisa, and you would think you should at least be machmer on yom tov rishon. It's completely not true, and that there's nothing to worry about, and forget about what this Gaon, as the way he puts it, what this Gaon said, which was a ta'ut bidvar mishnah, just a beautiful kind of historical note to this daf and the difference between, because we'll see, well, we won't see because we're waiting for the siyum. But l'maisa, the whole meaning at the end of the daf is the way that Talmid Chachamim are marbim shalom ba'olam instead of these machlokas. So I just thought it was very, very appropriate on this daf to bring it.